Hello and welcome back to the Sunday Night Podcast. I'm Melissa Doyle. She's one of our most successful exports, known for her extraordinary ability to make people laugh. But Rebel Wilson's recent court battle against a magazine publisher was no laughing matter. I met Rebel on the beautiful Spanish island of Mallorca, where she took a little bit of time out from her latest project to chat to me about her past and her inevitably bright future.
We're good?
We're good. Okay. All
Rebel,
right.
Rebel, welcome to Sunday night.
It's great to be here. It's so good. In Mallorca.
Loving it. Are you having a ball?
I'm having such a ball. I'm at the end of shooting my Dirty Rotten Scoundrels remake movie, so I may be a little shattered, but it's awesome for you guys to come all this way here and for us to have a good chat.
Of all the places for you to be filming, I've got to say I was pretty happy when you gave us the call up and said, come to Spain.
Yeah. Well, I think it's like very cinematic here and you guys get to come on set and see some of the action, which I think would be more interesting than if we were just in a hotel room in LA or Sydney.
I know we'll go into a little bit more detail about the film later on, but the fact that you are producing it, starring in it, playing such a major... I mean, this is your baby.
Yeah.
You must feel proud.
It's really cool that through not getting jobs, I had to develop my own jobs, and this year I've got to produce two Hollywood studio movies back to back, which is a real ton of work. But it's such an amazing opportunity to be able to do that. And with Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, I got offered the property to remake and I came up with an idea and I thought, oh, it could be cool to have these two new characters do the story. And it was really cool that they trusted me with a lot of money to make the movie and to make it in kind of paradise.
But is it a different pressure on you? How does it feel for you as opposed to when you're an actor and you turn up? And I know that you put a lot into your character and you embellish and you own it, but to actually be in charge.
It is very different because when you're an actor, it's kind of like coming on a holiday when you just come up and you just only focus about your job. But being the producer of the movies, you're worried about what the other people are doing, if we're running on time, if we're running on budget, how happy is the crew? All different aspects are going on in my mind whilst I'm also trying to make jokes and make people laugh. So it's, it's definitely double duty, triple duty some days.
I want to talk about how hard you've worked. So take me back to the beginning. Take me back to Fat Pizza days and starting out.
Oh, my God. I love my character Tula from Fat Pizza. And I love that people actually thought I was that for quite a while. And I dyed my hair dark and let it have its natural curl. And people really thought, you know, I was that girl. I very easily fitted that character. And it was so surreal, but it was such a good learning experience, I guess, because we'd come onto the set of Fat Pizza and there'd be no catering. It's not like a Hollywood shoot. We'd just go through McDonald's drive-through if we wanted food. And sometimes we'd just get paid cash. Like, here you go. That was your money for today. And I'd wear my own tracksuits to work. We did have a makeup artist, but I'd often do my own sound. So, and if I wanted a prop, like, oh, I think I want this scrunchie or something, I'd just go buy it from Kmart and then come to set with it. So it was a very good learning experience, and all the guys on that were like so much fun.
Which then took you on to Bogan Pride, which you put so much work into. Was that something as well that you were very proud of what you achieved there?
Yeah, that was my first TV show that I wrote, produced and starred in. And that was what actually got me noticed in America, which is really cool that something from SBS in Australia got noticed by all the Hollywood elites, and that's how I got representation over in Hollywood. Yeah, but it is a lot of work. But I always had to write and produce out of necessity, really. So back in the days when I did theatre, and I was at the Australian Theatre for Young People, and no one would cast me, or no agent would even accept me, because I remember one agent meeting that I went to, and they said, oh, we can't really see you being in Home and Away, so we don't think we could help you. And so what I had to do is just write my own stuff. And I at first started doing plays, little plays in Sydney, and putting myself in them as a bit of self-promotion, and that's how I got Fat Pizza in the first place.
Are you one of those people that the moment someone says no or closes a door, it just makes you want to go even harder?
Yeah. And, I mean, maybe a normal person would have given up and would have gone, ah. But for some reason, I always had this inner confidence, and I always knew, even though nobody, like, not even, maybe my best friend Nick, but nobody else in my family thought I could make it as an actress. Everyone thought I was a bit demented by the malaria that I'd had. And I'm like, no, I think I could make it. I think I could be actually really good. Even though I was a bit shy and I didn't look like your typical Hollywood actress, but I always, for some reason, had this confidence and thought if I keep trying, I could do it, even in the face of so much rejection. Yeah, which is a bit crazy looking back at it. And everyone thought, all the girls from my high school thought, oh. But then now they go, oh, it's awesome. But at first people were a bit like, oh, I'm not sure whether you should do that. I think you should do your law school and you got into that, so you should really like study hard and just do that as a job. But eventually I showed them.
God, yes.
Yeah, yeah, which is good. It's very satisfying.
Did politics interest you?
It definitely did. Like when I finished high school, I went and was a youth ambassador. That was a Rotary program. And my job was to give speeches all around Africa about Australia and how good life in Australia is. And it definitely gives you a taste for like representing your country and that I could do that. And so who knows? Eventually I might go into that path if I get bored of making people laugh. Yeah, go into a more serious path, definitely.
What would you like to do?
Well, it's lately I've been really trying to rebuild my career after having a 2-year period where it was so dry and devastating. And so ever since the jury verdict this year in Melbourne, suddenly everything was just like, it was back. And people went, oh, okay, those lies weren't true. We love Rebel again. We're going to hire her. And I've done my 2 movies that I've produced back to back. And it's overwhelming how night and day it is since the jury verdict. And so everything's going so well now in Hollywood. And I'd love to just keep entertaining people and make movies that have a really positive message to them. But then at a point, I always, because Oprah's my total hero, and she always says, like, if you get, you know, power or success, it's really good to then give back and have a purpose for that. And with the entertainment stuff that I do, I like to help people because it makes them laugh and makes them escape their lives for the 90 minutes of the movie. And in public office, it would be more like giving back in other ways and standing up for people that don't have as much of a voice as what I do.
So is that something that's come from the experience you've had in the last 12 months?
It definitely gave me confidence, like taking on a huge media organisation that really bullied and harassed me. The fact that me as just one individual could stand up to that and do it, I think, with class and dignity after them just throwing everything at me, I think it was a good training ground for, yeah. If I had to go through something like that again.
But I guess it's given you an insight into the fire in your belly, the passion, all of those factors probably in yourself that you've never had to show, where suddenly you go, hang on a second, I'm going to fight for the little guy. That little guy's me right now.
Yeah.
But it can be someone else one day.
Yeah, I know. And I think with my background and qualifications, I am in a position to speak up for other people and to help people in more than just entertaining them, in really, you know, getting out there and helping people. Having a mum who's like a public school teacher and a sister who's a nurse, it's, you know, you see things that could be improved in Australia and that someone like me who has the profile could help.
So what, advocacy, politics, what do you think?
I don't know. I'd love to... For Australia to become a republic, we're getting quite serious now, but for Australia to become a republic and for me to help in that, and then some kind of political career could be really interesting, I think. But we'll see how things go. You know, you never know what's going to happen, and my life has taken such crazy turns anyway. But that was definitely one of the factors of why I wanted to finish my law degree, so I had that, and why I try to be a person of, like, good character and a good representation of Australia.
But this is the side of you that I want to see, that I want to know more about. I feel as
though...
Yeah,
I think people think I'm a crazy party girl, and I'm like, if I really was like some of my characters, I really wouldn't be in my position that I am today. And a lot of the time when people find out I went to, like, one of the best law schools in Australia, they're like, oh, I thought you was dumb. Because I play a lot of fun, dumb characters. But I guess what people don't know is the very serious side, the business side, the entrepreneurial side that I've always had as well.
But I love that about you. It's like a secret weapon. Oh, yeah. You can pull it out when you need
it. I know. I definitely get underestimated all the time. And certainly when I was on Australian television and I would do a lot of my own contracts, people were like, oh, hang on, Rebel's on the phone. She wants to talk about Clause 5B. And I'm like, yeah, I do. And I was the first individual to contract with a network for my show, Bogan Pride. And on a sketch comedy show I did called The Wedge, I also owned all the rights to all of my own characters, which was a new thing. I don't believe anyone else before an Australian sketch comedy had done that. So, yeah, I always got little things in there, but they were kind of more behind the scenes, and now it's great for people to see that side of me. So they don't think I'm a crazy lunatic who just goes around going, ah, all the time. Because there are a lot of people, it's why dating is so hard, because they really do think I am like my characters at times. And I also have, I can be very fun and have wild nights out, but I can also have to be very serious and focused and responsible.
Just because you're blonde and smiley and funny doesn't mean you haven't got a brain.
I know. And it is weird to be always underestimated, even now. But it's awesome as well, because then you come in and, like, crush it and you feel very proud of yourself.
You crushed it after what was a pretty big year. Take me to the beginning. You've done Pitch Perfect 2. You've worked so hard to get where you are. Mm-hmm. You're on the precipice of this incredible career. Boom. What happened?
So Pitch Perfect 2 came out in May 2015. And for me, I'd been elevated to be the co-star of the film. And the buzz around it was just huge. And the movie smashed it. It became the number one movie around the world. And we beat Mad Max, which is an amazing film, and we thought we weren't going to beat that. And all of a sudden, the phone's ringing. Everyone's like, Rebel, this is what you've been waiting for. This is why you worked, like, years and years in a theatre for free. And you did all those Australian TV shows, and you came up and you did Bridesmaids and all those first Hollywood movies for no money, because now you're going to make it. Like, now you're going to be paid millions of dollars per movie. All those 17 years for every day since I was 18, 17 years of hard work is now finally going to pay off. And my agents, American agents, were like, oh my God, you're going to get so much. It's going to be awesome. We're so, so excited. We're so proud. We're so happy. People sending champagne. Like, it's a huge deal as an actress when you have that day. And then the very next day, to have a series of articles start coming out that basically said my whole life was a fabrication and that I've lied to make it in Hollywood, came. And the timing was not coincidental. The timing was because, obviously, I was number one. I was on top of the world at that point. And then the story exploded. It wasn't just in Australia. It went all around the world. So I was in New York at the time. And it was on American television, it was on American radio. It was everywhere on the internet. I couldn't look at anything. And people were calling me a liar and a fake. And for someone like me who prides herself on being very candid and authentic, it was just probably the most devastating thing they could have said to me, because obviously no one would believe that, I don't know, I assaulted somebody or I was a drug addict and went on some massive bender. This was probably the worst thing that they could say about me that people would believe, and people did believe it. And so I went from this girl who has just worked her absolute ass off to get where she was, to just being torn down in a second, in a 24-hour period. And what was most sad about it is that I had no idea why these people would do this to me. And I kept just asking people, like, why would they do this? And hoping it would blow over. And then month after month came, and instead of all the movie offers that I was going to get, I got nothing. And doors that were open just shut, and I got fired from two family movies that I'd already completed, which was probably like my lowest point to get called into the studio and to get fired by the big boss. And I'd never been fired before in my life, and I was like, oh, okay, the trailer's already come out with my name on it. And yeah, getting fired and then realizing, oh, this has caused so much damage. And it's a group of strangers who have done this to me, and I tried to be the bigger person and thought, okay, I'm just going to work my ass off. I'm going to go around to everybody and say, you know, what if I did this? What if I work for free? I'll develop up movies so you don't have to pay me at all. I'll just develop them, and if they're really good, you could go. And then it was 18 months. Luckily, I had signed a deal for Pitch Perfect 3 days before the article had come out, which wasn't ever guaranteed, but I was like, oh my God, it was just really good luck that I'd done that. Because in the 18 months since the articles came out, I got no actual roles. And instead I did do a little bit of theatre. I went to London and did the West End, which was really cool and fun, but not what I really wanted to be doing at that point in my career. At that point, I wanted to then headline movies, and I had proven success from Pitch Perfect 2, and instead of doing that, I just kind of went right back down again. And it was just, it's really hard to put it into words, because it was so devastating and so hurtful. And yeah.
Are there words to tell me how you felt when you woke up that next morning? Okay, park the professional rebel.
Yeah.
The young woman, you've worked so hard.
I know.
You read this.
Yeah. And what gets me emotional, like when my mum gave evidence at the trial, and she's like, this is a girl who went to LA, which is like, sorry, with like one suitcase and a pillow and a doona. And now she's made it. And then these people, they have no idea how brutally hard it is to make it over there, especially being someone like me who's not, you know, a glamour kind of actress, and I've done it all just through hard work and my own talent and imagination. And for these people to do this, if this was their own sister or their friend, they would realise like how hurtful and devastating it is. And instead, these people just sat in their offices in Australia and went, she's super popular, we're going to bring her down and write whatever we want about her. And they don't think of the consequences that, yes, I'm an actress and I'm in the public eye, but I'm a human being who worked really, really hard to get to that point. And then to have it all taken away was just, it was just malicious and it was ugly.
I know eventually you fought back, but before you got to that point, the next day, what did you do? I mean, I'd sit in the corner and sob and rock. What did you do?
I was filming a movie, How to Be Single, at the time, and I was praying that I wasn't going to get fired from that job because of all the negative press, and that's just what can happen. You can get yanked out of movies, and I had to put all my devices away. Occasionally I had to bring him out so I could see what scenes I was supposed to be filming, but I had to lock up everything, and because everybody in my entire life, basically, who has my number, who has my email, contacted me. And imagine if thousands of people who you know contact you going, oh my God, what is this? Like, why? Some people, so even weirdly, some friends believed it and were like, what are you, like, what's happening? But most people were like, I can't believe this. And so suddenly your phone blows up and your emails blow up, and it's everything comes at you at once, and people are looking at you, and people on set are like, oh, you know, and it's too much. And so you kind of, if you've ever been involved in a scandal, it kind of is just really overwhelming, and there's not much you can do but kind of have a semi-mental breakdown. And it's very, very stressful when you become in the centre of a scandal. Yeah. And it was so salacious. People were like, oh, she fabricated her whole life to make it. And now they were bringing me down for it. And so people, there was a lot of interest in the story, and it was just, yeah, very, very intense. And also I didn't know what to do because I'd never had that happen to me before. So I was just kind of hoping it would go away, and praying it would go away and it wouldn't really affect me, because anyone who knew me would know it wasn't true and would know it's all just a bunch of lies. But then that didn't seem to happen.
But take me to that day, because I want to talk to you in a little while about the defiant rebel, the strong, tough woman that was in court every day saying, screw you. But before you get to that point, you're a normal human being with a heart that's beating. That next day, can you give me any idea of just, how did it impact you as far as emotional and, you know, you would have been feeling sick to the stomach.
Yeah, you first of all, you're shocked. You're like, why would this happen to me? And then you get very angry, going, who are these people? Why are they doing this? And you get upset, and because it's such an emotional time, like, you start getting physical reactions, and your body starts going crazy because there's nothing you can do to stop it, and all sorts of things started going wrong with me. And I guess I'm lucky I didn't have to go to some kind of center or something where they calm you down, which shows how strong and like responsible and sensible I am. And all I could do is I tried to go to work and do my job. There were some scenes from that movie, How to Be Single, that were cut out, an arc of my storyline. But I just tried to do my job and show up and keep my head down and just, yeah. But it was, I don't know, at one point I think I was just like curled up kind of, because you just, everything was coming at you so fast that you just really, it's really crazy, and it was very not a great thing to have to go through. Yeah. And just the irony of it, of having the day where your movie's number one all around the world and you've worked 17 years to get to that point, of now you've made it and you're going to be probably set for life, and you'll definitely get a few more movies out of that, and the money you'll earn could, you know, you could really set you up. And then to go from that to the very next day just being torn down so publicly and viciously. Yeah.
Was it an intentional takedown?
It definitely was. I'm not the only person that it's happened to in Australia. But it was timed to the release of Pitch Perfect 2, when I was just gone all around the world promoting the movie. I was everywhere. I was on huge billboards in Times Square and huge billboards in Sydney, and my face was everywhere, and the interest in me was at its maximum. And so that's why they pressed the trigger on articles that they knew weren't true, and articles that they had wanted to write a few years ago and were told they couldn't because it wasn't true. But when I was at my peak of popularity, they're like, you know what, we're just going to put these out anyway, which is, yeah, it's really cruel.
When did you work out who the former schoolmate was who fed it all?
I knew before that because other girls in my grade, we were kind of, there's about 80 girls in my grade, we were all pretty tight, and I had been told stories that this one particular girl was weirdly obsessed with my success, and apparently every time she saw me on television or in a movie, she would feel terrible about her own life and lash out. And so other girls in the grade had told me she's contacted every single media organisation in Australia to try to sell stories or say negative things. And it was weird. I only had one class with this girl in my whole entire high school life. And so she wasn't a friend, but she wasn't not a friend. And she was known as a bully and had bullied other girls throughout high school, but that's when you're younger and, you know, a lot of girls go through an awful stage when they're teenagers. But she's now obviously an adult, and I think it was a weird obsession with me and how that made her feel about her own life. And all of the other girls in my grade were very disgusted in the fact that she would do that.
Have you reached out to her?
No, I don't think. I pity her and I feel really sad for her that she would do that. And obviously she was too cowardly to come to court or, and obviously her stories were all lies, so she wasn't going to try to defend them in any way. And to hear that she got paid about $2,000 from the magazines, I mean, was it really worth it? Because now she would have that on her conscience, and I feel like that's kind of probably karma enough for her.
Reading court documents, I think the thing that I took away from it, okay, age, whatever. Most women don't, you know, who cares whether you, what age you are is actually immaterial. The thing that probably upset me the most for you was having to justify and explain your own life, your family, how you grew up.
I mean, how bizarre to have to go to the Supreme Court of Victoria and prove your own life story. It was something I was very happy to do because obviously it's a true story, but it was so weird going, okay, do we have photographs of like the front of the family houses where we lived in? Do we have photographs of the family business, which is called Petcetera, et cetera, where we sold little dog products at dog shows? And after all these years, because I'm 37 now, and going back and having to prove your own life. But the great thing was is obviously there's so many witnesses to everything I've done. And we could have got hundreds of witnesses to come in, but the fact of the matter is we didn't need to because it was so clearly obvious of things like I came from a dog-showing family, I grew up in the western suburbs of Sydney, I went to Africa after high school, and all the things were so obviously proved. But it was bizarre, and my sister went to my storage unit and looked through all things and found the picture of me with malaria and found certain things that you never think you would need to prove your own life. But that's what I had to do. And I was very happy to do it. And it is an interesting life story. And one day I'll probably write a great memoir about it all. But it's all true.
Oh, God, what are you going to call it?
I don't know. There's been so many puns on my name when people write about me, so it'd be hard to come up with something actually original.
Do you think too, because you're a great storyteller, so you've clearly told your story, your life history, mm-hmm. you've, embellish is not the right word, but you tell it with such beautiful humour that you make it sound funny. Do people listen and go, oh, that can't be real?
I guess so. I mean, sometimes you go on talk shows in America, for example, and you're there to give a comic performance, and the stories I'm saying are true, but I might say them in a comic fashion. But yeah, I do have comic time. Even I don't think I'm that funny in real life, but other people say when you tell a story, like, you can be funny. Just the way I say it is funny. But I think, like, some of my classic stories of, like, when I got malaria and almost died, and people find it amusing. But I guess it's just in the way I say it. But it's obviously a true story and it really happened.
We could say it like that. I got malaria and almost died.
Yeah.
But you could say it in the Rebel Wilson fashion and horrifically we'd probably find ourselves laughing.
I know, which I guess is a skill that I have. To make people laugh, especially in tragic stories that have happened to me.
When did the point come where you said, okay, enough is enough, I'm fighting back?
I knew, having graduated from law school, that I had 12 months in which to sue on the articles. And probably I got advice probably that first week when it all happened. And they said, oh, let's just see how it plays out. Sometimes the best strategy is to ignore it or to kind of laugh it off and see what happens. But then when it became clear that not only am I losing jobs, but I'm not getting any opportunities that are good opportunities, that I just felt, after month coming up to the 12-month deadline, I thought, I mean, I just have to sue them. And I'm not a litigious person. I've never been involved before in suing, but I just thought I have to do it.
Was also the Elizabeth Wilson era. Did that then prompt you, once she took action, did you sort of have that moment of going, well, hang on, if you are, then mine's bigger?
That's kind of was like the final straw, because this media organisation, Bauer Media, had done terrible things to me before. The thing about the articles that came out after Pitch Perfect 2 was that it was so malicious and caused me so much hurt and loss financially that it was the clear thing to sue on. But this company had years and years of disgusting and disgraceful behaviour towards me and my family, including harassing family members and harassing my grandma. And there was one incident where someone kept calling my grandma, and she is very frail. She's had a brain aneurysm. She's in and out of hospital. She only has one landline in which to communicate to people because she doesn't use a cell phone. And she has to get up on a little walker to get to the phone. And someone kept calling her and harassing her for negative stories about me. And it just wasn't on. And I got my grandma to write down the name of the person and where she said she was working for. And I tweeted out some very angry tweets to get that person's attention, because I felt helpless that I was in another country and couldn't help my grandma. And ironically, there were two women of the same name who have worked for Bauer Media, and I tweeted out the picture of the wrong woman. So I felt absolutely awful. I'd never lashed out like this before on Twitter, and I got it wrong, and I was just so apologetic. But at the same time, my grandma means everything to me, and I'd stand up for her any second on any day about anything. So I'm really sorry that I got it wrong and that I hurt an innocent woman. But at the same time, it did make the harassment stop, and it did highlight the issue publicly. And, she hasn't been harassed since, which is lovely.
Was it tough turning up to court every day, being strong, being resilient?
It was. So the trial itself, it was a very clear-cut defamation case. It was very clear that Bauer Media had maliciously defamed me with these articles. So their strategy was to try every defence under the sun, including that the articles were true, which was so absolutely ridiculous, because with one photo or one video clip or one witness, we can prove, oh, it's clearly, you know, their articles were false and a bunch of lies. So what was really hurtful is that their strategy seemed to be to just bully, harass, and sling any kind of mud they possibly could at me and also my family for a month. And yeah, it's a court of law. Everybody can get their say. There's nothing I could do. I couldn't stand up in the middle of the court and go, "Oh my God, would you shut up? You people are so full of it." But I couldn't do that because that's not how you behave in court. And I was on the witness stand for close to 7 days, telling my whole life story, telling very intimate details about myself and my family. I had to hand over, like, basically my whole computer, like all the emails or your tax records, everything they just demanded of me. And because it's a court case, I had to give it. And it was just, it was relentless. The trial should have only really been about 2 weeks, but they kept extending it. They kept trying different defences because they knew they were going to lose. And they just drew it out and made it so painful for me and my family, and also so expensive, because they wanted to deter me. They even hoped after I'd given evidence that I would settle with them, and I'm like, no, that's not going to happen. I've come all this way. I'm going to tell my side of the story, and I'm going to let the judge and jury decide, which I was always very confident they were going to decide in my favour. But no one has ever stood up to Bell Media in this way, and I was the guinea pig. And they obviously wanted to discourage anybody else from doing the same thing, so they would just absolutely brutal and bullied me into the ground, and there was nothing I could really do apart from tell my side of the story, tell the truth, and try to keep dignified and be the better person in all of this.
How was the day when you won?
Awesome. The weird thing is when a jury's deliberating, you don't know how long they're going to take. And the jury were given 40 questions, kind of like an exam paper, because they'd sat and listened to all the evidence, and they had 40 questions, and they deliberated, I think, for close to 2 days. But I had to be ready, and I was 20 minutes away from the courthouse, ready at a moment's notice. I think you only get like 15 minutes notice, and then I had to rush over. So I would be sitting there ready, and I made up this song, like I was just going, singing this stupid song to my sister, like, waiting, 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 because all I could do was wait. And then when we got the announcement, like, we just rushed. I think I brushed my teeth or something and rushed over there because I thought there'd probably be television cameras. And it was so, so satisfying that the jury voted with me 40-0. So on every single of the 40 questions I won, it was such an overwhelming, comprehensive victory that it was amazing. And it was kind of like instantly my reputation was, restored. Yeah, so instantly my reputation was restored. And it felt like this massive weight was lifted off my shoulders. And I've proved very publicly that what I was saying was the truth and that they wrote a bunch of lies and that I was maliciously defamed. And it was just, like, it was brilliant. It was awesome because they made it so difficult for me to do this. And the behind the scenes, the bullying that went on was just... Most people would have probably quit, yeah, under that kind of stress and pressure. But I'm like, nope, I'm sticking in there, and I was confident I was going to win, and yeah. So it was very, very satisfying to win. I know I don't want to be gloating or anything, but you know, this was something that involved me and my whole family, and I had to share everything very publicly, and it was great to be rewarded for that.
I think to go through something like that, you very quickly work out who your friends are, who has your back.
Oh, yeah.
Did you also find out who didn't? Did some people flee?
No, every single person I asked to be a witness in my case said yes, which was amazing to be a character witness. And we actually had so many that because Bauer Media only called two witnesses, two of the journalists who wrote two of the eight articles, we didn't actually need all the people. So it was so brilliant that so many people from my life and past wanted to come and help. It made me feel like I just was like, oh my God, like I'm very, very lucky to have this kind of support from my family and friends. And even though it was a hard time, that was just so lovely that because people had to take time off work and fly down to Melbourne and it was brilliant that, and sometimes random strangers were helping, and it was amazing.
How did you celebrate that night?
Well, I went out with my legal team because they had worked very, very hard. And we went out to a restaurant in Melbourne and just had fun, but not too much fun. And then the next day, more of my family flew down and we went out to another restaurant and just had a lovely time. Yeah, I couldn't really go anywhere because I knew people would follow me and stuff. So people came to me and it was just, yeah, it was an awesome feeling.
Then the feeling when Bauer turns around and lodges an appeal.
Yes, which I wasn't surprised about at all. It is part of the process. So basically, they can't complain about liability. Like, they clearly maliciously defamed me and the jury verdict was 40-0. So what they are complaining about is the amount of money that they have to pay me. So they're arguing about the quantum of non-economic loss and also the judge's legal basis for awarding me special damages, which basically means, yeah, they're whining about the amount they're going to have to pay me and trying to get it reduced, which is really gross considering that I'm giving the money to charity and that everybody knows that. And so that $4.65 million, it may get reduced, it may not. But considering that money is being given away, I'm not even taking the money for myself. Like, how gross can you be that you're going to now complain about the amount? It was a record payout. It was four times the previous Australian record for a damages payout. But if you sat in the court and you heard all the evidence, it was very, very clear that I've lost millions and millions of dollars because of these articles. And, and I'm entitled to that. So the appeal is very easy. It's a one day in front of three new judges and they're only arguing on those small little points. So we'll see. It's so disappointing. I was going to give the money away for Christmas to the charities, but now it's delayed at least 6 months or so. From me being able to do that, which is more annoying than anything else. But considering Bauer Media's conduct, it's not surprising.
You put out a tweet. Have you got more stuff lined up to fight them with?
I do. The interesting thing that happened during the court case, because it was so public, is that so many people came forward with information. And luckily, we really didn't need to call on these people in court or to use it in court. But people who were in the room when the editors said, I want to get that girl, like, she's a bitch, like, I'm going to fucking, like, we're going to write stuff about her and, like, just bring her down. Because I hate her. Look at her all living in Hollywood and having fun. And so people that were in the room when these discussions about maliciously bringing me down were happening have come forward and said, either I no longer work for the company or I'm really trying to get another job because the culture at this company is highly toxic and it was really unfair. So, God, the people that came forward and said all these sorts of information, it was really good because it made me understand how it all happened and why I was taken down, and also the process of how they take down other people that don't deserve it. And it was really interesting to get a look behind that curtain of what goes on at this company.
Having gone through all of that, What have you learned about yourself?
I've learned that I'm definitely a unique individual. I was uniquely suited to bring this kind of a case in Australia because of my legal background and because of the resilience I have. And I've learned that I love having family and friends who are so supportive, and they would have done anything to help out. And I'm a kind of a person that doesn't like to rely on other people, but then in that situation I needed to, and I love that all those people were there for me. But I've learned that I'm much more than just like a silly comedian who can come out and make people laugh. I think a lot of people saw what I was doing as very positive, because in their own lives they might need the courage to stand up to a bully and to have something done to them, and then they need the courage to stand up. And in a lot of ways they saw like a similarity in my story and found confidence from that. And I had a lot of people come to court and tell me that in person. People that had, I know it's a very different situation, but people that were like victims of domestic violence or victims of bullying come to me and say, "We're so glad you're doing this and standing up for yourself," because then it gives other people encouragement to do the same.
Do you feel like a bit of a trailblazer though? There's this, you know, you've got old girl power. I mean, your movies, you play strong women, you know, you're a Bella, you're a really awesome, strong woman. You made me want to watch Wonder Woman on the plane coming over here.
Oh, yeah.
You know, just that notion of you go, you're a fighter.
I am, but I've kind of had to be. I was lucky in my life to be surrounded by really strong women, and then to go to an all-girls high school, which was very feminist. Like, I remember our principal wanted to change the Bible, so instead of saying, referring to God as him, wanted to refer to God as her. So I grew up in kind of a very feminist atmosphere, and it was bizarre to then leave school and realise, oh, the world's not really like that, Rebel. Like, there's a boys' club, and I had to play the game in comedy with this boys' club for many, many, many years. And I learnt a lot, and I'm grateful for that. But now with the work that I'm doing, it's all very girl power. And I don't think it was a mistake or that I got in Pitch Perfect that was so girl power. I think it was meant to be.
Looking ahead career-wise, you had a hallucination about winning an Oscar.
Yeah.
Do you see yourself winning it one day? Do you see yourself maybe transitioning into dramatic roles?
I would love to win an Oscar. I just got voted into the Academy, which is, so I get to vote for the Oscars now, which is so cool. I'm going to vote for like all comedies. I'll vote for the best movies. So I guess that was such a great recognition of the work that I've done and that they see potential in me. But I would love to do a few more dramatic roles and see how that goes. I did early on in my career, but no one really cared about that. But now, hopefully, I'll get to do more versatile roles and to show people more of my acting skills, which will be really fun. I do think that I will win an Oscar at some point. I don't know why I think that. Well, I think, I guess, because of the hallucination. But weirdly, I believe that sometimes the things you manifest do come true, and I do see myself collecting one day.
But if anything, recently you've shown us there are so many strings to your bow. Why wouldn't a dramatic role in winning an Oscar be another?
Yeah, weirdly, I spoke to Robin Williams about a month before his death. We were filming Night at the Museum, and we had a chat about he saw in me, and he was really encouraging of me. He said, I know you could do it. And I've really held that close to my heart. And it just depends on finding the right role, which I've been close to getting some, but hopefully in the future I will. Yeah, hopefully people don't laugh when I do a proper serious role. I'll have to be like really serious, like put on a serious face for it.
So just in wrapping then, you're sitting here today, you've gone to hell and back in the courts.
This year has been like horrific, but also so rewarding. And next year, 2018, I've decided it's just going to be the year of fun for me. Like, no stress, no hassles. Yeah, I'm just going to have fun. But it's so bizarre to go from kind of being shunned because people thought I was a liar and a fake to the jury verdict, and then instantly things turning around and two movies that I'd worked on for free developing up. Isn't It Romantic, with my fellow Aussie Liam Hemsworth, that we just shot in New York, and then this Dirty Rotten Scoundrels remake with Anne Hathaway. For both those movies to get up within 3 days of each other, and it was just so brilliant and such a roller coaster. But it's awesome.
Are you happy?
Yeah, I am. I'm a person that has clearly chosen career over other things in life, and I haven't been lucky enough to have kids or to get married. I do hope that's in the cards for me. And now that the career seems back on track, I feel like hopefully next year I can have more balance in my life and aim towards that.
Really? You're going to work just as hard?
No, I'm having a year of fun next year. I will have to go and promote the movies. Although I have ideas all the time for movies, and I've got this list of ones that I do want to develop up. But I need to have some fun as well and enjoy myself.
Well, I feel like I'm walking out of here punching the air, cheering you on. Have I missed anything? Is there anything that you want to add? Because this is your chance to, you know.
Oh, gosh. It's hard reliving the trial, and it's crying so much about it that, I mean, it's weird that I still have a slight amount of tears over it still, because I've had to relive the trauma of being maliciously defamed a lot. But I guess I just wanted to thank everyone who has supported me through this, and I definitely felt all the public opinion that was so positive towards me and towards what I was doing. And that night when I was celebrating with my family and everybody else in the restaurant was like high-fiving me, saying I did a good job, and that was really cool, because sometimes it might be hard to feel sorry for a celebrity, because you go, oh, but they get to go on a private plane sometimes and they get to hang out with Justin Bieber, or, you know, they do make millions of dollars at times, and sometimes it can be hard to feel sorry for someone like that. But it was great that people saw the situation for what it was, that it was a malicious takedown that was really unwarranted, and people were really supportive of me standing up and hopefully changing journalism standards now in Australia. And there's been some really positive things to come out of it. A lot of the magazines are now doing ethics classes for their journalists, which is amazing and a great thing. And hopefully it'll make that girl or guy think twice before they sit down and write something that they know is false and publish it, which is great for everyone. The other thing I think I wanted to say is tall poppy syndrome in Australia is such a negative cultural thing. And for me, one of the reasons why I like to fight it is because I want young Australians to be the best that they can. And everyone's good at something. And I don't want young Australians to be scared of standing out or scared of overachieving because they feel like they're going to get cut down. And so I hope that, I'm not sure whether I'm explaining it right, but I really hope culturally that that starts to go away, because it is a negative thing about Australia and people definitely do notice it. And I think, the young people should just want to be the best in their field and not just be like, oh, I'm just going to be average so no one picks on me. that they want to be good at what they do. If that makes sense.
Totally. Celebrate our achievers. Don't cut them down.
Yeah. I mean, if I've done something really bad, then sure, bring it on. But yeah, if all I've done was have a hugely successful number one movie around the world, maybe write something nice. Yeah. So I guess that's the moral of the story.
You crushed it. Thank you.
Oh, thanks. I'm so glad you get to come on set now.
I can't wait.
And see what we do.
We have to frolic through vineyards with Spanish men around the edges. I mean, gosh.
Oh, I know, it's hard. It's hard. I know. It is actually hard, though. I know I joke, but we work very long hours on the set.
You do.
Yeah.
Thank you.
No worries. Thanks, Melissa.
Thanks for listening to our Sunday Night podcast. Don't forget to hit the subscribe button. And remember, you can find more information about all of our stories on our website and Facebook page. Until next time.